Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ken Metz, co-chair of Tech Talk, and my other co-chair is on. Alan is here. I saw him already. And Bob Acosta is with us, and we have a group of you, and we're glad to have you with us today on Tech Talk, the 6th of February, 2017. This evening's Tech Talk program will feature Mr. Joseph Norton, and he will be talking and discussing a podcast that he put out recently in regards to handling the installation of Windows 10 by yourself as a blind person. As I said, what Joseph will be speaking about is an accessible installation of this Windows 10. And he may also have some other good news for us about the recovery and system repair operation, available through the Recovery Media. Joseph attended the Georgia Academy for the Blind, and then completed his high school in a mainstream program. He went to work for Mohawk Systems as a service representative in customer service, and did that for 15 years, and then decided to leave that and work on his particular interests, which had to do with computers, obviously, as we could tell, and we will be able to tell this evening. These were related subjects such as playing around with different operating systems and configurations and trying to discover both limits and limitations. Joseph stated, quote, "I enjoy helping people with their computer problems." He mentioned that once he also helped a sighted guy who was having problems getting into the web. He was using AOL. And the sighted guy went to AOL, was on the phone for 2 hours with one of their customer service people, couldn't get it figured out. Joseph took his own computer and set up a very similar configuration. That maybe took him an hour, but then he was able to help the guy over the phone in about 15 minutes, and the guy was able to then get into the net. So he was very proud of being able to do that, and I can't blame him. I think that's a great feat when AOL couldn't help him. Joseph is married and has 2 children, 6 and 12. They sort of keep him a little busy, he said, when he's not at the computer working on other solutions. Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker for this evening, and you will have time for questions at the end of his talk. It gives me great time to present Mr. Joseph Norton. Joseph, the microphone is yours.
Okay, thank you very much, Ken and all. This is a privilege to be able to speak on this program because I haven't really been able to do that before. I've been listening to the program and talking with several of the people that you had on here, so this is my first time. Apologize, I've got a little bit of a cold. I don't know if that's a reaction to a flu shot I just took or what, but anyway. But I have been playing around with installing Windows 10 and Windows 7 and Windows 8. I've been doing several things, this goes back quite a ways because I like to play around with installing things. So even in the DOS days, I was installing DOS and trying different things and different versions of DOS. I actually spent quite a lot of money on different versions. So calling it from, say, IBM PC DOS to MS DOS to a couple of different versions of MS DOS just to see how they worked and stuff like that. And then when Windows 3.1 came out, I figured out how to install that just by the keyboard, knowing what keys to press and stuff like that, and memorized that at the time. Now I couldn't. I'd have to start all over again with that. But then when 95 came out, I was able to upgrade from Windows 90 from Windows 3.1 to Windows 95, actually, with speech through a lot of the process, believe it or not. I think, what was I using back then? I think I was using ASAW, if any of you remember that one, Automatic Screen Access for Windows, written by Larry Skutkan. And it had good potential, and I'm sorry that it couldn't have continued in development, but it got me through quite a few tricky spots in my early Windows days, both in Windows 3.1 and Windows 95 later on. And then I eventually got to use other programs like JAWS for Windows, and eventually, well, I did use Slimware, Window Bridge, and WindowEyes, but through all that, I wanted to be able to install Windows by myself if I needed to. And a lot of those processes I was able to memorize with the keyboard, but then as things got more complicated and I got older and my memory wasn't as good, I said I would love to have some other solution to it. For a while I had a Macintosh, and if I get the wherewithal again, I'll get another one. But I saw what they had done with it, and allowing you to install Mac OS with speech. And that was just an amazing idea that I could just, if my system crashed, if I needed to put a new hard drive in, I could just boot up the thing and start speech and get it going. I was amazed with that. And then there's been a lot of work in the Linux field to make sure that's possible in different distributions of Linux, where you can actually do a graphical install now with Linux that way. So Microsoft has been trailing behind on all this. It's been done in Linux, it's been done in Mac OS, and of course iOS has that ability, and even Android had it. So Microsoft, it's about time they caught up. And what they've done, they have finally, from a main menu podcast I heard some weeks back, they have enabled speech in the interface when you first boot the DVD up. There were some other solutions to that, to a sort of talking install of Windows. Somebody that was very capable, and I wish I could thank them personally because I'm not sure who that was, but they actually developed a Windows 7, a Windows 10. These are what they call pre-installation environments, I believe it's called, but I may have that slightly wrong, but they developed one for both Windows 7 and Windows 10. They actually got it going for 32 and 64-bit computers, and they ran NVDA in that particular setup. And it wasn't perfect, but it was enough to actually give you a small working Windows setup, and from that you could actually run the setup program on a Windows DVD and install anything from Windows 7 on up to Windows 10. I've actually done it with this particular thing. But it takes some finagling to do that. You have to copy a bunch of files to the right places and be familiar with the command line and various other things like that. So it's not for the faint of heart, but it is doable. And I've been able to install Windows 10 on a couple of different systems, three different systems in the house here, both for my wife and my daughter and myself, to get everything up and running. But what Microsoft has finally done is enabled the ability for you to boot a Windows 10 DVD up. And this is in the upcoming release. It's not available yet. It's in what they call the, it's a testing, here we go, an insider preview, they call it. And anyone can sign up for these, and you can download the insider preview builds of Windows that are sort of like beta software is basically what it is, with a different name. And when I heard about this, I said, great, I'm going to get that. So I had already signed up for Insider Preview Build, since I tend to live a little bit dangerously. So I downloaded the ISO image, which, for those who may or may not be familiar with this, that's a disk file. It's a file that contains the information that can be burned onto a DVD or a CD-ROM. In Windows' case, it's definitely got to be a DVD because it's so big. And you could burn this on a DVD and then boot it up, and once the program gets so far, you then press the appropriate keystroke to bring up Narrator. And that has changed in this version of Windows. Previously, Narrator was brought up by pressing Windows key and Enter. Apparently, they had some trouble with this. So they've now changed it to Control Windows Enter. So if you get the new build of Windows, which I think is coming out in April, that's for the public, that keystroke will change. So if you are used to bringing up Narrator with Windows Enter, nothing's broken. They just changed the keystroke to Control Windows and Enter. And once I figured that out, I brought it up, and lo and behold, it talked me right through the installation of Windows. Not everything spoke perfectly, but it spoke quite enough for me to be able to tab through the options and make the appropriate selections. And then I was able to get Windows installed. It even gave me a sort of a blow-by-blow thing. So it was telling me when it was copying files, when it was registering items, and a couple other things. And then the system rebooted, and after it chugged for quite a while with not much going on, it then brought me up to the dialog where you install Windows, and this time I heard speech. And the recording of that is available on coolblindtech.com. It's under where it says See the Future, I think it is. It's the heading. If you search for See the Future, you can actually hear that podcast on coolblindtech.com. You can hear me go through the entire process of setting up Windows 10. But that has even changed since that recording was made, because with these insider preview builds, they're updating things and tweaking things. So now, when it comes up for the first time, it will actually start talking with a female voice, and it will tell you it's Cortana, basically, is what's doing the talking. But it is asking the sighted user questions that they can answer yes or no into the microphone. It's actually going to start being a little bit more interactive. I'm not sure. I don't know if the phone does that or not. And one nice thing, it also tells you if you want an assistive screen reader, you can press Control Windows Enter, or as it says, hold down the Windows and Control key and press Enter. So it gives you the prompt now for bringing up the screen reader. So if a blind person in the future, after April, if they get the very latest Windows 10 on a computer, they will actually get a prompt when they first turn the computer on to press Control Windows Enter to bring up Narrator. So you can set up a system totally by yourself without any trouble fairly minor difficulties, but nothing too bad, nothing most other people wouldn't go through as well. And now you are even told how to get the screen reader turned on. So that's coming up in the release of Windows 10. I understand everything I'm hearing points to sometime around April as to when this is going to happen. But now how long that'll take to appear on new laptops or new desktops that are out is anybody's guess. But so at least in the future now, when you bring a computer home, you should be able to get it set up all by yourself if you want to. Especially with these laptops, everything is already pre-configured and you don't have to worry about the installation of Windows. But the reason I did this was because I do like to install Windows by myself. I like to put it on a new computer. And a lot of the laptops and things that you buy these days come with a lot of what we call bloatware, which they'll put a copy of McAfee on there, and they'll put, I've had some of them put all kind of shareware programs and everything else on there that may or may not be accessible, and they just take up space. And some of them even start, I had one computer one time that had something called Weatherbug on it, and that thing wanted to start and annoy me, and I didn't need it right then, and I had to figure out how to get it stopped. So I like to put Windows on a system sort of by itself. And now with this new thing that Microsoft has done with Windows 10, that is going to be a reality, not just for me, but for a lot of other people who might want to do this themselves. Here's another thing, though, that this enables you to do. I don't know if any of you have ever done this, but Windows gives you the ability to create a recovery drive. And this is a useful thing because in the past, when you bought a new computer, Windows came with a CD, or the computer rather, it came with a CD or a DVD which had the Windows operating system on it. And usually there was another set of discs that had the install from the factory on it, so you could use that set of discs to restore the computer. But most of the time, this was not easy to use. You had to know what keys to press when, even then, some of it was graphical, so you might or might not have to use a mouse. So typically, you'd need sighted help to get it going. And this is the same in the process that you go through nowadays when you create what's called a recovery drive up until now. But with this new build of Windows, if you go to create a recovery drive, that process is fairly accessible. You tell it where you plug in a USB stick, and you tell it where you want to save that recovery drive to, and it tells you it's going to format it and erase everything off of it. It has to be with at least 8 gigs in space to do this. And it'll give you all the options that you can select, make sure you've got it the way you want it. It's not too complicated. And it'll go and sit there and chug for probably a half an hour or more and create your recovery disk or recovery drive. In the past, of course, if your system crashed or you needed to use that recovery drive, it was still not accessible. But I had to play with this to see what would happen. And I have to say that there is good news. When you boot up the recovery drive, you simply wait for the system to boot up. You do have to give it about a minute or so. And then you can do Control Windows Enter, and Narrator will come right up. It'll ask you to select a language for your keyboard input language. And then it'll give you options like Continue if you want to boot up into Windows regularly. But it will also give you options to repair your system. I don't have it in front of me right now, but it gives you various options to troubleshoot. That's what it's called. So you tell it you want to troubleshoot, and you can restore from that backup drive. You can restore from another image copy of Windows. You can run System Restore and restore from a restore point. I haven't tried that yet. And you can do startup repair. If Windows isn't starting, you can have it run startup repair through that. So that's something neat. Now, I will tell you that this is still in beta, you might say, and I had something weird happen. I wanted to restore from this backup, and so I wiped off the hard drive and took everything off of it, the partitions and everything, and I told it to recover Windows using that recovery stick that I made, and it went through for a good while. Then it suddenly announced that there was a problem, and I've tried this with this particular build of Windows, and it keeps telling me that there is some sort of a problem. But the weird part is, I'll hit cancel, it'll say changes are going to be made, and I'll just hit cancel. And then in a few minutes, the system boots up and gives me the standard welcome to Windows with my sound driver working and everything, and asks me to set up the programs, and it actually seems to work, so I don't know what kind of a problem, but it must not be too critical. But I'm going to report this through feedback, so hopefully they'll be able to fix that problem. And again, when you use the Insider Preview builds, you are not going to get a perfectly working system every time. They're putting new features in, and so when they do that, you can have problems sometimes. So I'm assuming that's one of those. Hopefully they'll get it squared away. Or it might just be something with my system. I still haven't tested everything that I'm going to, perhaps. But that is good news, because sometimes if your system messed up, you would have to get sighted help just to figure out how you could repair it or something like that. And the repair can be done through the recovery drive that you create, or startup repairs can be done using a USB stick that has the Windows installation on it itself, that you would use to install a fresh copy of Windows. One final thing I'd like to mention in terms of booting up your system: there is no easy way to boot up your system from a USB stick that just works every time. With the Mac, you can hold down a certain key and kind of arrow up and down through different things and figure it out. With these laptops, there are various methods for doing that. I have used Dell laptops where you hold down the F12 key when you power up the system, and you get several different options and One of those is to boot from a USB stick using UEFI settings. Also, another one is for legacy settings. So you would want to use the UEFI option if you're booting from today's newer systems. But this is something you'll have to have some help with the first few times that you do it. Once you get the hang of it, you'll be able to memorize which keystrokes to press for your particular system and be able to get it up and running. My Acer is a little bit simpler. It does the same thing where I have to hold down F12 when I'm booting up the system, and then I can just arrow down as far as the arrow will go. It doesn't cycle back around. It just stops, and the USB stick is the last choice on the menu. Once I hit enter on that, it starts going through its boot up process. So I have this fairly well memorized, but unfortunately you will have to get some help for each system that you have. HPs in particular have a slightly different setup, and you may have to go through a couple of menus, or you may not. I think you might be able to just hold F9 down on some of them, but each one is going to be different. So that's the bad news. But the good news is, once you figure out how to boot the USB stick, you have the chance to have speech in there. As soon as the system is booted up enough, the Windows sound drivers for, I guess, most common equipment is installed on these DVDs by default now. And so that's a very good thing for those of us who want to do it ourselves. I don't have a lot more. I was going to play the demonstration, but I couldn't figure out how to do that, to play a recording through this setup. But if you all have any questions for me, I would certainly be happy to try to answer them. So with that, I'll go ahead and release the mic, and if anyone has any questions, feel free to jump in there.
Okay, thank you. If you have any questions, please hit your F8 key, hit the letter Q, and enter if you have a microphone. If you have a question and do not have a microphone, hit the F8 key, type your question, hit enter, and our great reader Ron will be reading those questions into the record for us. So again, F8, Q, and enter if you have a microphone and have a question. F8, type the question, enter if you do not have a microphone. Ron, I'm going to ask one question first, I think, and I'll take prerogative here, and then we'll give you some time. Joseph, in regards to backing things up on your machine, if you're going to do a full Windows 10 install, obviously you're going to want to back everything up. Backing up your files, at least, are a normal thing that we should all be doing anyway. What about things like PST files and stuff? Are they pretty easy to back up? Is there a way to back all of those up?
PST, I'm not even sure what, I hate to say this, what is a PST file?
Well, let's say your Outlook files, your email files and stuff.
That's a good question. I haven't backed them up in quite a while. I used to have a program that would back Outlook Express up. Boy, that goes back a while. One thing about the way Outlook works, for example, for Outlook, a lot of the mail servers today, like iCloud and Gmail, the mail is actually left on the server, and so it's not hard to, you can a lot of times just leave it there, and if you haven't put it in the trash, the files tend to be left on the server. I haven't had much occasion to do that. If you're using a POP3 service, not exactly sure what the best thing to do with that would be, because I haven't had occasion to. I've been using Gmail so long, I've gotten spoiled, I guess, because Gmail tends to have everything and keep everything that you want to archive, and so it has really been a godsend in some ways, because I've been able to search back through messages from years back and be able to handle that. I'm sure there are some programs to do backups with for Outlook and such, but I'm not sure what is the most accessible program. But you do bring up a good thing. When you're doing an install of Windows 10 or Windows 7 or whatever, it is a good idea to to back up files, probably at least your home directory. One good thing about Windows now is it does store just about everything in a home directory, so that if you want to, you can take your home directory and back it up onto an external hard drive. There are various external USB drives that you can get, some pretty large capacity thumb drives anymore. They've got 64 and 128 gigs, and I think even more than that now. So backing up is not as big of a deal as it used to be, because you can back up things. Also, if you have Office 365, you actually get 1 terabyte of OneDrive storage with that when you use Office 365. And so I use that because I use the free version, the Office version of WindowEyes, you might say. And because I pay for that storage, I've backed up a whole bunch of things up to OneDrive. It takes a minute to put them up there, several days, in fact, sometimes. But once you get them up there, they stay up there. Unless you try to delete them, unless you go and delete them, they will stay there for you, and you can bring them back. Another thing I hear that is going to come back in this version of Windows 2 is what they call placeholders, because the problem with using OneDrive, if you have, let's say you've got about 300 or 400 gigs of, say 300 or 400 gigs worth of books that you downloaded from Bard, if you put them up on OneDrive, you can copy them all into your OneDrive folder, but they kind of have to stay on your hard drive until they're copied up there. Then you, if you want to save yourself hard drive space, you have to tell it not to save those folders, and then you lose them on your hard drive, but they stay up on OneDrive. And so what they're going to do is add the ability to have placeholders where you'll see the files that are stored in OneDrive, but unless you ask for them, you'll be able to set it up to where if you ask for them, they'll come down. If not, you know that they're there and you can access them whenever you feel like it. It's just that they have to download when you're ready to actually use them. So that has its good points and bad points, but there are several different ways you can back up to things like OneDrive, and I haven't used Carbonite, but some people are using that. So there are different solutions where you can even back up online, and then once you do that and you restore the Windows system, you can get everything pulled back down. So it is possible to do that, and it is a very good idea, especially if you're playing with something like this, to back up your most important files. And in my case, OneDrive has been the thing that I've been using most of the time for that.
Okay, thank you. Ron, do we have any questions, please?
Currently, I see 5 people with questions, and K.O. is first.
Yay, ladies first! Hi, Joe. Question I got for you. When you update Windows 10 and the newer version comes out, is it keyboard picky? Because I've noticed that with certain keyboards like USB, it doesn't even work. Unfortunately, you would have to get like a PS3 connected one.
I haven't had problems. I've plugged a USB keyboard into this laptop because I wanted the full set of keys before, and I haven't had a lot of trouble. I've booted off several computers. I even plugged a Mac keyboard into my computer and used it and didn't have any major problems with it, so I'm not sure where are you running into this particular trouble at?
When the anniversary date came out, the anniversary edition came out, we had to go through Microsoft Accessibility to help us get the on-screen keyboard on and all that, and I needed some eyes to do that, so that's the only problem.
Oh, I see. You've got someone that uses the on-screen keyboard, is that right?
Well, we had to actually get, it was the on-screen keyboard to enter in my password for the Microsoft stuff.
That is unusual, because I've updated. Now, one thing I will say about the about updating to Windows 10 when it comes out with this new release, when I had WindowEyes in there, it told me I had a build ready to try out, one of the Insider Preview builds, and it did not let me update it until I took WindowEyes out, and then it finally updated to the new build. But as far as keyboards, unfortunately, I can't say that I've had any real major keyboard issues with that. So I'm not I'm kind of stumped on that one, unfortunately.
Okay, no problem. I'll test it out, because I do have a USB keyboard connected onto here, so thanks.
Okay, Ron, next question, please.
Okay, Hammond is next.
Hello, Joe. Maybe this may be a little too... Do you know anything about the technical aspect to this? Like, how did they finally manage this? Because, you know, in the past, people would talk about how you could do this, you know, self-install and stuff on the Mac, and, you know, they always said that Windows couldn't because of the BIOS and whatever, and, you know, and stuff like that.
Okay, Lowell, you know, as far as how they did it, it seems like, I guess with a lot of the newer sound cards, there's some way of accessing them that that they've been able to put in place, or maybe there are several sound drivers that work with a lot of common equipment. I'm not really sure how they did it, but again, the hardest part is learning how to boot up a DVD or boot up a USB stick. There are ways you can go into your BIOS and set the boot options so that it boots up the right way. But again, that's something you will most likely need sighted assistance with. But once you get it done, you can set it and forget it, and then set it up to boot off a CD or whatever. And say, if you set it up to boot from a DVD first, if you've got a DVD in the drive that's bootable, it'll boot right off of it. And then, obviously, you're not going to leave your Windows DVD in the computer, so if you take it out, you know, everything will go back to booting off the hard drive. But as far as how they did this, I don't know, but I knew that it was theoretically possible because some other people had been setting up some things that had sound support enabled, and someone even put a copy of NVDA in there and was able to use it like that. So I knew it was possible, and Microsoft has finally done it, and they should have done it probably a long time before now. One thing I will say, too, about sound cards, my understanding is that if you don't have a sound card that is recognized by Windows, because I'm sure not every sound card is going to be recognized, especially with an older system. Say if you've got an older Sound Blaster or whatever, you may have problems there. But if you're using a USB headset, or a USB sound card, there are some USB ones out there, that can actually be recognized by this new setup they've got and can be used. So that's also an option if your sound card isn't recognized.
Yeah, I know. I think it's Turtle Beach, if I remember the name of it correctly, and they make USB sound cards as one. Ron, next question, please.
Okay, David and Camille.
Hi, when this new version of Windows comes out, should I erase the existing Windows 10 that I have, or should I load it over the top of the one? And is there a general rule of thumb as to how often we should just do a clean install of any Windows version?
It's really a kind of a thing. It depends on your preferences, what you like to do. In terms of upgrading to Windows, they've tried to make it so that it should do it without any major hiccups. And again, the problem I had was I had to uninstall my screen reader. So that's, you could actually uninstall your screen reader and then let Narrator talk you through the process of selecting the update and going through there, because Narrator is, being that it's their built-in screen reader, you can let it do it. But in terms of, it's more like a case of how do you feel about it. If you don't want to mess with your files and try to back them up and make sure everything, you know, all your settings and stuff like that, if you like them just the way they are, you can let Windows upgrade itself, and it'll take up some extra space on your hard drive for a while because it's going to give you the chance to go back to your old version of Windows for several, I think maybe a week, I forget exactly how long it is, but it'll let you go back if you really don't like it. So, and depends on if you have limited hard drive space. One fellow I knew had an Acer, what they call a cloud book. I don't know if any of you have seen these, but this was like a 32 gig. It had a 32 gig solid state drive. There are no moving parts in this machine. And the Windows 10 anniversary update was available, but there was nowhere near enough space to upgrade to it. So in his case, a fresh install was the way to go for him to get Windows 10 on there, to get the updates on there. But in most systems nowadays, you probably have enough hard drive space unless you've really gotten a lot of big files going. So it's really a matter of, you know, what you prefer. If you don't mind backing up your stuff and going through, there are times when installing Windows clean, say, you know, maybe every year or so, you probably get a little bit of system improvement as far as certain things will run a little bit faster. And so that is an advantage to, you know, doing a fresh install every time they come out with a new build, which I think they're going to do it maybe once a year. At least that's the pattern they're setting so far. So just knowing, make sure you know where your stuff is backed up, and, you know, you'll probably get a more zippy system if you install Windows fresh on it, with the, you know, and then put your stuff back at that point. But again, it is more of a personal preference.
Okay, again, if you have a question for Joe, press your F8 key, hit the letter Q, and enter if you have a microphone. If you don't have a microphone and have a question, press your F8 key, type the question, and then hit the enter key, and Ron will read it. Ron, do we have any more questions, please?
Yes, Alan is next.
Nice job, Joseph. This might be a little technical, but I'm curious. I know back in the day, you mentioned a lot about recovery CDs. I used to be kind of fixated back when I was running Windows XP. I'd come across an article on Gizmos or some of the websites talking about build your own ultimate boot CD, where you kind of like made sure, you know, it took you through a set of steps where you copied a bunch of files to this CD to make sure it would work. You know, like if your hard disk ever crashed, you needed to boot off the CD and try to poke around and do some stuff. I never was able to figure out how to do one of those things where you could put, like, screen reading capability on them. I don't know if they were, if they used a Linux kernel or what, but you're obviously real technical on some of the stuff. Have you ever examined how to, like, build your own boot CD? I know you alluded to maybe Windows 10 is going to address that going forward, but have you ever done it, like, with some of these older systems where you were able to build, like, your own recovery CD or USB flash drive or what have you, where you could put like a screen reader in it and you could actually be meaningful to work with when you can't see? Thanks.
Hey, Alan, good to hear from you. As far as that goes, I never had been able to do that myself. I think some of them do use Linux, some of them where they can make backups of your system and that. I have used Linux. Recently, I've used Linux to do backups of my system. There's a version of Linux which is based on the Ubuntu flavor of Linux called Vinix. And it's probably not the orthodox way of doing it, but I've actually backed up data from my Windows partitions and been able to recreate them. I had to make sure I did it with the same exact hard drive, but it was a little tricky, but I had to write some scripts to go and copy my different partitions, and there's a thing called NTFS clone, which allowed me to make a copy of everything that was on my hard drive, and it didn't copy the blank space, it just only copied the stuff that was actually there, so you were able to sort of restore everything just exactly the way it was. That has limited usefulness. I'm pretty sure it wouldn't work if I needed to move hard drives or anything like that. So this, I haven't had a lot of work with that. In my days when I used Windows XP and I had an older system, I used to use a program called, it was something from PowerQuest. I'm trying to think what it was called now. It was a recovery software package, and I memorized keyboard sequences to make that work, but I didn't have a screen reader or anything. One thing I did have back then was I used some of you may not have ever seen these, but they used to have these things for recording telephone conversations. They're called a telephone pickup, and it was like a coil, electromagnetic coil, and you plugged it into the mic jack of a tape recorder. I used to put that thing somewhere on the computer, and I could actually hear the hard drive doing things, and I could hear the processor doing things. I could tell when a file was being unzipped and then some other things like that. The subtle sort of swishing noises that it made and various other things. And I would use that to tell if I was doing something right. So I had to come up with ways to do it before when there was no speech. So I used to do a lot of that stuff. Probably would have driven anybody else crazy, but I got sort of used to it as a background.
I remember PowerQuest. I think the program was called Drive Image. It was one of the first programs that came out that would let you do a complete image backup of your system, and then you could actually boot from a CD if your system ever crashed. So, yeah, just in a related topic, I'm using Macrium Reflect now, which is a similar program. Now, granted, it works with Zoom text, and I'm able to get enough speech that I'm able to make all my image backups just fine. But if my system ever crashes, I'll need some sighted assistance, because when I boot from the recovery CD that it creates, I won't get speech. But, hey, I'll get my brother to come over and use his eyes. And once you put a new hard disk in and restore it, I mean, you're back up and running again. So those kind of things are great. Anyway, thanks.
Brothers are good for something, Alan. Mine just lives too far away. Yeah, I remember the old telephone coil with the suction cup, absolutely. Ron, other questions, please?
Okay, Bobby Vinton's next.
Hey, Joseph, this is Bobby Vinton. Remember we talked about Blind Cool Tech, but I have a question about the Windows 10 install. I do clean installs once a year, of course, with Sighted Help, but once in a while I like to just do an upgrade. Now, here's my problem, and maybe you could help me out. I get stuck with the Windows.old folder, and I repeatedly try to clean it up with Disk Cleanup, and it will not even clean up. I try CCleaner. It just sits there, and the Windows.old won't go anywhere. Now, what do you recommend that I do if I'm just going to do a basic upgrade? Let's say I have no problems or whatever, and I just want to do a basic upgrade, but I don't want the Windows.old folder to stay there. Like, what can I do, or what steps can I take to get rid of it?
I think I understand the problem. Let's see. So you have an option in Disk Cleanup to get rid of it, but when you select the option, it appears to not do anything. Am I correct on that?
Yes, you are, Joseph. It does nothing. And it's really annoying because I played with the system at other people's houses, like, you know.
Bobby, try that again because you were buffering and you never came back. So try that comment again, please. Okay, we'll come back to you, Bobby, because you're not coming through. So you may have to re-enter the room. I'm not sure. Ron, another question, please?
Actually, before you do that, Ron, let me just mention this. If you can still hear me, the only thing I could think of to do is you might be able to bring up a, if you know where that Windows.old folder is, I think it's in C:\. If you go to an administrator command prompt, you might be able to type, go to your root drive by typing CD/ and hitting enter, and then you could type RD, that's for remove directory, /S/ Windows.old, being very careful to type that in just that way. And it'll say, you know, are you sure? And you say Y for yes and hit enter again, and that might take it out. Again, you would have to be an administrator to do that, but sometimes even that, things are locked out on that. So if I thought Windows was normally supposed to get rid of that for you. And eventually, I think with this new update, it probably keep it around for 30 days, and it's supposed to delete it for you and, you know, reclaim your hard drive space. So anyway, that's the best thing I can come up with right now. I'd have to do a Google search on that and see if anybody else has this problem and figure out what they did. But that's the best I can say right at this point. So I'm sorry about that, Ron, but I wanted to make sure I threw that in just in case.
Yeah, at this point there isn't any other people with questions.
Okay, Bobby, are you back, and did that help you?
Yeah, that helps me. And, yeah, the truth is that after 30 days, It is gone. It does disappear after 30 days, but if I play with the system long enough, I should not have to wait 30 days just to get rid of this folder. And I think we need to say something to Microsoft about that. You could disagree on that, Joseph, but I think that Microsoft should be aware that we want to get rid of that when we upgrade.
Oh, absolutely. And this is the first I'd heard of this, but no, absolutely. You know, it's your system, and you should be able to deal with it the way you want to. It shouldn't be forced on you as far as that goes. That reminds me, by the way, something that they've done with this latest copy of Windows. I don't know how many of you folks out there use the command prompt, but in this new build of Windows that they've come out with so far, if you bring up a command prompt through the menus where you do Windows key X and go down, they've replaced command prompt with PowerShell. You can get that back though if that's the way you access command prompt. If you just do if you bring it up another way though, you may not have to deal with this issue. But I did have that problem. That it was bringing up Windows PowerShell, and I didn't know much about using that, and I still don't know as much as I probably should. Something to keep in mind. That is changeable. You're not stuck with it, but you have to know how to change it. So it's not too hard. You just have to get to the right screen. There are a lot of new screens in this. They're tweaking things as they go along. One thing that might affect you all that I just thought about. In this new Windows 10 update, when you go to remove programs, you may encounter an extra thing that shows all your programs with all the apps in one display. And that one is kind of a little tricky to work with, but it's not hard to work with. It's just that it'll look different from what you're used to. So there... it seems like they're always trying to tweak something on this, but that was one of the changes that I noticed in Windows 10, if that rings a bell for anyone.
Okay, well, Joe, unless you had something else you wanted to add, I want to thank you so much for being on Tech Talk this evening. And if folks, and I want to give you the last word before I end up talking a little bit and thanking everyone. I want to give you the last word as far as you being here with us tonight, and thank you so much for doing the program. If someone wanted to contact you, can you give an email or contact information of some sort?
Certainly. My email address is pretty straightforward. It's joseph.norton, that's J-O-S-E-P-H dot N-O-R-T-O-N, at gmail.com. I got in on the Gmail thing almost, not from the ground up, but almost that way. A friend of mine, back when Gmail first came out, you had to be sent invitations to use Gmail, and my friend sent me an invitation, and I was able to get my first and last name at gmail.com, which is practically impossible now, I guess. I'm not even sure if Engelbert Humperdinck could get his name at gmail.com anymore. Somebody's probably taken that. That is the way to get in touch with me, joseph.norton at gmail.com, if anyone has any questions. I do plan to do a rebroadcast on Cool Blind Tech when the actual preview build turns into a release build, because it'll showcase what it's like to install Windows, and it'll actually be the proper... everything will be pretty much how it's going to be, from at least for that year anyway. So stay tuned for that, because I do plan to do that and try to get better sound quality in there by that time as well. So, because I didn't like the way I recorded this one, so I want to do it a little different. Again, I apologize for the having a cold, but I wanted to stick it out there, and I certainly appreciate the opportunity to be on the program. So without further ado, then I'll turn it back over to our host here, and again, thank you very much for having me on.
Well, again, thank you, Joseph, and we certainly appreciated you being with us this evening on Tech Talk. And I also want to thank Ron for doing the reading of the questions for us. A great job, as always. I know, I believe I'm correct, Ron will not be here next week, and Susan has offered to help out, so we'll appreciate you ahead of time, as we always appreciate you, Susan. Alan, my great co-chair and sidekick here, thanks so much for your help. Bob Acosta, thanks for giving us the opportunity to take care of Tech Talk. We appreciate, and most important, thanks to all of you who have participated and who are listening to the program and who have joined us this evening. It's really your show and your program and your interest that keeps us going, and we certainly enjoy having you with us. So for next week, I am working on something. I will get the newswire out a lot earlier. Just some things came up. But anyway, I've said that a couple of times. I'm trying to get myself organized here to make sure I'm getting a few programs ahead of time now. And that's what I'm working on this whole week. So I'll get something out by Wednesday of this week. And with that, the room, as they say, is yours for the evening. You can talk as long as you'd like, as Pat Price and Bob Acosta always say, and I will continue with that. So with that, have a great week, everyone. Join us next Monday on Tech Talk. Thanks again for listening.
Hey, Joseph, before you leave, if you haven't left the room, I have a request. I don't know if you could do it, but can you please do a tutorial on how to remove programs on the new Creators Insider previews, just so we feel comfortable and we're not afraid to upgrade?
I'm not. Tell me this. What programs are you particularly talking about there?
No, you said the programs and features layout was going to be different. I'm not asking you to teach us how to remove programs. I worded it wrong. What I'm asking you is, can you show us the new, you know, because there's no podcasts on it, the new programs and features layout on how it's laid out. You said there were going to be apps and programs mixed up.
Oh, I see. It's not terribly different. I may wait until the Creators Update comes out, just because they have already tweaked some things from one to the other. So I don't want to get too far ahead on this. I figure that the ability to do a talking install is going to stay, as far as I know. Boy, I hope it does. They've been needing to do this. But I will attempt to do one so that, you know, because it's not something you shouldn't just rush and upgrade. You know, if you're happy with what you're doing, you know, don't just go ahead and rush everything in place. You know, just kind of see how other people are handling it and what kind of bugs are being reported and stuff like that. So, but sometimes we do like to live on the edge. I know I like to play with new things. I will try to do a podcast. I think I might be able to do something. It'll probably be in the next 2 weeks or so, but I'll try to let Ken or someone know. I'm not sure who the best person would be for that, but if I do put something else out related to this, I'll be sure and let you all know about it, whatever is the best way to do it.
Joseph, this is Michael. I listened to your podcast, by the way. Good work on that. Do you know if they're going to tweak the whole updates in the new Windows release in terms of, well, in this build and, you know, previous builds and whatnot, in the 1607 build and 1511 and whatnot, you know, you couldn't choose your updates, your cumulative updates. Is that, do you know if they're going to bring that feature back? You know, where you choose the updates that you want to install?
I didn't know they had blocked that. That's a very good question. I didn't even know they'd done that, because I tend to let everything pretty well install by default. So I didn't know that was not available. As far as updating itself goes, when I updated to this preview build, the only thing I had to do was get rid of my screen reader and let Narrator. I set it up to start when the computer starts and just let it narrator talk me through it, and it seemed like it updated without a hitch. There weren't any weird things that came along that you had to wait for the computer to go silent for, as long as you had narrator going. I pretty well had speech. The one time when it didn't speak was when it was just doing the update, which took probably an hour or so. I forget exactly how long it took, but as far as cumulative updates and that, I had no idea. I'll have to look at the Windows update settings and see what kind of things it gives me. So I'm glad you made me aware of that. I'll take a look at that and see what I can find out.
Okay, thank you very much, sir.
Oh, no problem. Glad to help. And some of these questions are questions that'll come up as I talk to more people. I'll get various things like that. So I appreciate these questions because they give me things to watch out for. Because if one person has them, somebody else will. So that's a good thing. I appreciate knowing this.
Hey, Joseph, a little off topic. I know we're talking about Windows, but I'm just very curious on why Larry Scoopcon, because I haven't spoken to him in years, got rid of Blind Cool Tech. Is it because of Cool Blind Tech came along, or do you know the story behind that? Or what?
Ron, let me ask you, I just walked in. Is the show officially closed here?
Yes, it is, Bob.
Okay, that's appropriate. Go ahead, Bobby.